Walking up a flight of stairs, grabbing a meal from the microwave, taking a bath. These are all everyday tasks that are easy to do until one day we begin to struggle. The eventual reality of getting older and needing extra help can be a hard pill to swallow, and it can take a toll on not just the person experiencing these hardships, but also the people close to them.
The adult children are stepping in. They're changing from full-time to part-time. They're moving in with their parents. Their parents are moving in with them. And it's what I see happening is that the children that are taking care of their parents are using the money that they've saved and the investment in their work life into their parents. So they will have less financial resources to live on themselves. In addition to, it's very, very stressful taking care of an older adult.
That's Amy O'Rourke, a senior healthcare expert and care manager with more than 40 years of experience in the field. She's also the author of the book, The Fragile Years. O'Rourke frequently works with families struggling through this period, helping to guide them through potential solutions and resolve disagreements about care between family members.
You can pull on the skills of a care manager, which is a profession that helps guide adult children in their journey with their parents, but it becomes a lot to juggle in systems that are complicated. Hospitals are complicated. Nursing homes are complicated. Home care is complicated, in addition to all the financial, Medicare, Medicaid, et cetera. It's a lot to learn and very stressful and exhausting.
When it comes to finding the right hands-on care, in-home help is typically the preferred method. The client can receive assistance in a familiar place without moving and uprooting their life. However, this option is not feasible for many families. Private help can be expensive, hard to retain long-term, and demand can frequently outpace the supply. You'd assume that more people are heading into this field as the need grows, but Dr. Susan Chapman says there are several deterrents.
Those jobs specifically are not highly valued or rewarded in our society, so there's a lot of turnover. It's very strenuous physical work. There's a high risk and incidence of injury. There's often very little training. The pay is very low. Often these workers have to rely on public benefits just to support themselves. There are no benefits like many other workers have in the healthcare sector.
Chapman is a professor in the Department of Social and Behavioral Sciences at the University of California, San Francisco School of Nursing. She argues that direct care workers, whether helping clients at home or in a shared facility, must receive better pay, benefits, and treatment. Their role is essential and is no easy feat. It requires skill, patience, understanding, and the day-to-day care can be emotionally and physically taxing. Yet, more times than not, we don't value this work enough to pay a living wage.
I would say the range is from minimum wage, federal and state minimum wages, and $15 an hour would be considered a pretty top wage for these workers often.
Even during the pandemic, which severely affected nursing homes, many employees received no hazard pay and little understanding from management.
During COVID, we had huge outbreaks in nursing homes and a higher incidence of COVID infections and deaths among residents and staff. Yet staff still had to go to work, often work without adequate personal protective equipment. There wasn't any sick time. Often there wasn't any hazard pay. And so staff got ill too, yet they kept having to come to work. Often, because they're often living in poverty, we're living in areas of high infectious rates, in housing that was often crowded and having to take public transportation. So were there a number of factors that increased the risk for these workers overall? And then they still have to go to work because they, you know, need the money and they don't have any benefits.
And the cycle continues today. Low wages, ill treatment, and a lack of recognition and respect all feed into extremely high rates of turnover in the direct care sector that employs about 4.5 million workers. This frequent turnover creates instability and negatively affects older adults requiring reliable long-term help. In the coming years, as demand increases and the workforce stays stagnant, Chapman says it's a grim picture if we continue on this same path.
I think we'll move more toward a two- or three-tiered system where the wealthy will always be able to afford the best. The middle class will be in jeopardy and maybe using all their assets to afford anything, and low-income folks will get the worst care.
So what solutions can counteract this crisis? The first step is shifting to a model that better supports and acknowledges workers.
Particularly if we look at other countries where there's more a social care model of care, workers are paid equally depending on what their setting is, smaller facilities, more home-like facilities, different kinds of approaches to care, and different approaches to treating workers. So we're not in the dark here, we just need to do it. There are models out there, they just haven't been scaled up.
Both Chapman and O'Rourke agree that the government funding for elderly care is there, but is not properly allocated. Sometimes more Medicaid funding falls into the pockets of nursing home owners instead of backing livable wages for employees. In other instances, there's excess funding for end-of-life care, while other areas, like long-term in-home care, are severely lacking.
We spend $365 billion at the end-of-life care, meaning, you know, the last few weeks of life. And I would tell you that those funds could be used for in-home care, that a lot of it is crisis and hospital-driven monies. So I think step one would be reallocating the dollars into settings that older adults want, meaning at home as opposed to hospital reimbursed care.
Another barrier that impedes in-home care are limitations on who can receive Medicaid funding for certain types of services.
A lot of healthcare is siloed. You know, you have hospitals and you have hospice companies and you have Medicare home care companies, you have private duty home care companies. I think that there is a way to, say, for example, take hospice companies and allow different entities to provide hospice care. So a nursing home could provide hospice services, a caregiving agency could provide hospice services, and that would reallocate dollars from the Medicare program to in-home care. And I think we could also take some of the nursing home reimbursement to the facilities and reimburse the children, the adult children that are taking care of the parents, instead of the nursing home getting paid. If adult child is quitting their job, why aren't we reallocating those dollars to the daughter who's quit her job to take care of her mother, rather than putting her in a nursing home? So I think there's a lot of opportunity for creative financing here.
Similar to maternity or paternity leave, O'Rourke says there should be paid leave if a child or spouse needs to step in and take care of an aging person. This is becoming more common as private in-home care becomes more expensive and harder to hold on to. In addition, many children and spouses also rely on secondary resources like adult daycare.
Adult daycare, it varies state to state, but it is a good option for some that need a break during the day. The person that's medically needing it, and then like the well person and the sick person, I don't know how to say it better, and they can go somewhere for the day and get the medical care they need, and they can get a couple meals and get stimulated by the various activities programs. And it's a little more cost effective. The daily cost can range anywhere from $60 a day to maybe $150 a day. So you can do it once a week or you can do it 5 days a week. So it's a nice, and they also have daycare centers for those with memory impairments. You just have to look in your local area for what kind of daycare programs are available. But it's a good way to give respite care for both parties.
While there are several resources out there to help bolster care, the main infrastructure is broken. In order to decrease turnover, direct care workers need to be recognized for their work and receive greater pay and benefits. Part of this means more government funding placed into services like private in-home help. Aging Americans are already suffering from this care crisis, and millions more shouldn't be left to fend for themselves after a lifetime of contributing to society. But sadly, without action, this issue is only set to get worse. To find out more about this topic and our guests, Amy O'Rourke and Dr. Susan Chapman, visit viewpointsradio.org. This segment was written and produced by Amira Zaveri, studio production by Jason Dickey. I'm Marty Peterson.
Viewpoints returns in just a moment.
COVID-19 vaccines are rolling out, and many Americans are looking forward to getting back to normal. However, chronic stress of the past year can impact memory, mood, and anxiety. So during June, Alzheimer's and Brain Awareness Month, the Alzheimer's Association reminds you to make brain health a priority. Beth Kallmeyer, Vice President of Care and Support for the Alzheimer's Association, has tips to restore mental well-being.
First, think about recommitting to brain-healthy basics, like regular exercise, a heart-healthy diet, and getting plenty of sleep. Try to unplug from technology every night. Do what you can to manage your own stress, especially if you're a caregiver for a person living with Alzheimer's or dementia. And return to normal at your own pace by taking small steps and setting boundaries.
Kallmeyer says it also helps the brain to help others by volunteering in your community. For example, by supporting the Alzheimer's Association's The Longest Day event, June 20th. Find out more about Alzheimer's and Brain Awareness Month at ALZ.org.
Men with an enlarged prostate, also known as BPH, often experience urinary symptoms that significantly impact their quality of life. In a recent survey sponsored by Teleflex, nearly half of men with urinary symptoms said their urgent and frequent need to urinate makes them avoid activities they enjoy. 70% said their daytime energy level is impacted by having to urinate frequently at night. Dr. Greg Ewer of Urology of Virginia.
More than 65% of men with BPH in this survey have tried medication for it, but nearly a quarter say it didn't help reduce their need to plan their next bathroom trip. Fortunately, there's a proven option for BPH called the UroLift system that can provide rapid symptom relief while preserving sexual function and can be performed in a doctor's office.
Most side effects are mild to moderate. Serious bleeding and infection events are rare. Results may vary. Dr. Ewer is a paid consultant of Teleflex. Visit UroLift.com today for a urologist near you and see if the UroLift system procedure is right for you.
And that's Viewpoints for this week. Viewpoints is a production of MediaTracks Communications. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram to learn more about upcoming shows. And find a library of past programs on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. Plus, you'll always find previous segments and more information about our guests at viewpointsradio.org. Join us again next week for another edition of Viewpoints. Coming up next week.
We educate workers around knowing their rights. And it's interesting to see their reactions when they know that whatever the case may be, that they actually have rights in this country.
The fight for labor rights. Then.
Don't tie allowance to chores. It's good to give kids chores, but research has shown that it's important to give them that responsibility so they feel like they're doing their chores as being part of the family, a team player, and not just getting money for it.
The importance of instilling money lessons early on. I'm Marty Peterson.
And I'm Gary Price. These stories in depth on your public affairs magazine, Viewpoints.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.